Erev Tov. This week's Seder is Parshas Balak, and the topic for this year is really one pasuk, a very fascinating pasuk, a pasuk that is one of the fundamental principles of Yahadut. Perek Chav Dalet Pasuk Yud Zayin. The Nevuah of Bilam. Bilam is granted the ability to see what is going to happen with Klal Yisrael at the end of days. And when his mission finally fails, he's been brought to curse Klal Yisrael. And what he does is he blesses the Jewish people. So at the very end, after it's all over, and he knows that he's not going to succeed in his mission, he now tells words of prophecy. Pasuk Yud Zayin is a fascinating pasuk. There are three parts to the pasuk. Each one of the three parts to the pasuk is made up of two parts, a part A and a part B. It would seem as though the pasuk is simply repeating itself. Not so. No such thing. We're going to read the pasuk. We're going to begin with the approach of the Rambam to this pasuk, and then we're going to take a look at what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says on this pasuk. And ultimately we will get to what I believe to be an understanding of the pasuk that is of extreme contemporary relevance. It has a great deal to say to us today. The pasuk. Enough of introduction. Now the pasuk. Erenu, I see him below Ata, but not now. Ashurenu, I behold him below Karov, but it's not close. Dorach Tochav mi Yaakov, a star came shooting out of Yaakov. Become Shevet mi Yisrael, and there arose a scepter, a ruler over Israel. Umochatz Pa'atei Moav, and he breaks the very ends of Moav, the karkar kol b'nei Shev, and he crushes all the sons of Shev. Let's go with the pasuk again. As I said, three parts. In each part there is a repetition. Part one. Erenu v'lo ata. I see him, but not now. Ashurenu, I behold him. V'lo karov, but it's not close. What do I see? Dorach kochav mi Yaakov. A star came shooting out of Yaakov. I saw that v'kom shevet mi Yisrael, there arose a ruler, a scepter over Israel. What did he do? Umachatz pa'atei Moav. He crushed the very ends of Moav. V'karkar, he destroyed kol b'nei Shev, or the sons of Shev. Says the Rambam. This is the Rambam in Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchot Melachim, Halacha Aleph. I'm going to read the Rambam to you. And we're going to see that in this pasuk is enunciated one of the fundamental principles of Jewish faith. Says the Rambam the following. HaMelech HaMashiach Atid La'amod. I'm reading from the Rambam. King Mashiach is going to arise, ulahachzir malchut beit David liyoshna, he is going to return the royal house of David to its original glory, la memshala harishona, to the rulership that it had at the very beginning. Mashiach is boneh hamikdash, he builds the Bet HaMikdash, umekabez nidchei Yisrael, and he gathers in the dispersed of Israel. Vechozrin kol hamishpatim, and all law, the system of law returns, Biyomav in his days, Kishahayumi Kedem, as it was in days of old. The law of Torah will be the law of the land. Makrivin Korbanot, they're going to bring Korbanot, Vosin Shmitin Vyovlot, Kichol Mitzvata, Ha'amura Batorah, and the Mitzvah Shmitin Vyovel, according to all of the details as it is outlined in Torah, all of it is going to return the days of Mashiach. Now the Rambam says, "V'chol mi she'eino mamin bo, whoever does not believe in Mashiach,
whoever does not believe in Moshiach.
Or, and here the Rambam goes one step further, he says, Mishay no mechakel lebiato, one who does not wait for his coming. According to the Rambam, it's not simply a matter that you have to believe in the coming of Moshiach. You have to anticipate, live with the idea of anticipation. Hikonu lebiat HaMoshiach. You have to be prepared, you have to feel it. There has to be a sense of waiting, of anticipation, of longing. Whoever does not believe in him, nor does he wake with anticipation, lo bishar nevi'in delvadu kofe, does not reject only all other prophets, ela but Torah uve Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a rejection of Torah and Moshe. Because the idea that there's going to be a Moshiach and a Messianic era is not something that we know only from Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Zechariah, Malachi. It appears in Torah itself, the Torah has testified that there's going to be a Moshiach. Shenemar, as it says, God is going to return your captivity, he will have mercy on you, he'll go back there into the Gola, bring Jews back to Eretz Yisrael, and wherever Jews may be dispersed upon the face of this earth, they are going to be brought back. And the Elu HaDvarim, this is all Mefuroshim HaTorah, clearly stated in Torah, that there's going to be a very special period in history when all Jews will ultimately return to Eretz Yisrael. And when is that going to be? That's the Messianic period. And those words in Torah, says the Rambam, they include all of the great prophecies that were said by all of the Nevi'im. And now the Rambam says, of the parsha of Bilam, Nemar, in the parsha of Bilam, it also says that one-eyed guy, Sayyidina Yisrael, Shetum Ha'ayin, that one-eyed guy was able to see. God gave him the special blessing on behalf of Klal Yisrael to see Melech HaMashiach. And where does he describe Melech HaMashiach, King Mashiach, in this pasuk, the pasuk that we just learned? The Rambam is going to take the repetition of the pasuk and tell us that Bilam sees the first Mashiach and the last Mashiach. The first one is David, the one who lays the foundations for Malchut Beit David, the royal house of David. And the latter, the end, the Mashiach will come at the end. And therefore the Rambam says, V'shom niva b'shnei ha-mashichim. There in Parashat Bilam, he prophesies about the two Mashiachs. The Mashiach HaRishon, the first one, which is David, shall Shiat Yisrael, who saved Israel. And V'shom hu omer, there it says, Ed enu, I see him, v'lo ato, but not right now. Zed David, Rambam says, that's David. Ashurenu, I behold him, v'lo karo, but it's not close. The difference between phrase 1 and phrase 2 is, at enu is something that I can see quite clearly, it's just that it's not right now, but it's not terribly far off in the distant future. Ashurenu, imagine somebody who's looking off to the distance, maybe he's even squinting in order to behold it. And about that he's looking off into the distance, he says, below Karov, but it's not close, it'll take a long time. Erenu v'lo ato, I see him, but not now. Zed David. Ashurenu, I behold him, and it's not close. That is Melech HaMashiach. Dorach kochav mi Yaakov. A star comes shooting out of Yaakov. Zed David. That refers to David HaMelech. The kom shevet mi Yisrael. There arises a ruler of Israel. Zed Melech HaMashiach. That's King Mashiach. Umachat pate Moav. He will destroy the very ends of Moab. That refers to David. As it says about David, Vayachet Moab, he smote Moab, Vayimadadein Bechedel, and he measured out the land of Moab with a rope. The Karkar called in a Sheit, he will crush all the sons of Sheit. Zeh Melech HaMashiach, that's Melech HaMashiach, about whom it says, Umashlo miyom ad yom. He will rule from sea to shining sea. Umashlo miyom ad yom. A whole world, called in a Sheit, wherever they may be. The Rambam goes on to explain the next pasuk in this vein as well, and therefore he says, this principle, the principle of An imam in number 12. An imam in the Bemuna Shlema Beziat HaMashiach. It's this pasuk. This is where it's enunciated. Fascinating that not only does that guy Bilam tell us Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov Mishkinotecha Yisrael, he is also the one who tells us about the beginning of Malchut Beit David and then its ultimate rise to greatness through Melech HaMashiach. All right? We've done that. Now we go to the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Orach Chaim HaKadosh is fascinating. I have copies over here, but I think I'll just ani atamtzit. I will give you a tamtzit of the words of the Orach Chaim. But the Orach Chaim is a fundamental principle in Hashkafa that is going to be of extreme contemporary relevance. A number of words of introduction, some of them, that are brought by the Orach Chaim himself. He begins by citing a Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin asks, on the famous pasuk in Yeshayahu, where Yeshayahu says in the name of Hashem, Ani Hashem, I God, Be'ita Achishena. Be'ita in her proper appointed time, Achishena, I will hasten it. Hasten what? The coming of the Mashiach. So the Gemara asks, there's a contradiction between the word Be'ita and the word Achishena. Be'ita means something that comes in its proper time. Achishena means something that is hastened and hurried and comes quickly. So the Gemara answers, in the event that Israel is worthy, then the coming of the Mashiach will be hastened. In the event that Israel is unworthy, Mashiach will come anyway, because there's an appointed time, and Be'ito, he will come though we are not worthy. Whereas the Orach Chaim says in Parshat Bahar, Afilu yiyu Yisrael v'shoyim chas v'sholem, even if Israel will be wicked, God forbid, the time of Geula, that moment in time, will and must come. There is another question that the Gemara asks. The Gemara asks, we have a description of Mashiach in Sefer Daniel, where Daniel describes Va'aru imanone Shemayo, behold, with the very clouds of the heaven, he sees Mashiach coming. Zechariah describes Mashiach as Oni v'rochev al hachamor, a poor man riding on a donkey. So the Gemara asks, contradiction, will he come as a out of the very sky, or is he going to come poor man riding on a donkey? So the Gemara gives the same answer. In the event that Israel is worthy, they've done tshuva, they are tzaddikim, and the Geula comes as a result of the worthiness of Israel, then it's going to come in one single glorious instant of time. The very heavens will open up and the Messianic era will begin. In the event that Israel is unworthy, it will come, but it's going to come Oni Rochev al Hakamor, poor man riding on a donkey. Rashi explains what's the difference between the two. Oni Rochev al Hakamor is Ba'atzlut, slowly, slowly. In the event that Israel is worthy, great burst coming out of the very heavens. Says the Orach Chaim, after he brings the introduction, this is one of the places where the Orach Chaim dates, gives us a date when he's writing it. It seems this is very important to him. The Zelech HaHaoti says, this is the sign, Hein Onu, we are now betchilat me'ah hashishit le'elef hashishi. We are now at the beginning of the 6th century of the 6th millennia. That means somewhere around the year 5500. The year 501 is the first year into the 6th century. We're talking about 252 years ago. It's now 5752. He was writing this piece on Parshat Balak. He was writing it somewhere around the beginning of 250 years ago. Why is this important there? I believe that the reason why it's important is most probably he as well was aware of the calculation that was made by the Vilna Gaon who came later, but this was the calculation that was made by the by Chachmei Yisrael, that there, as there are 6 days of creation, so there are the 6 individual days of creation: Sunday, Monday, Yom Rishon b'Shabbat, Yom Sheni b'Shabbat, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi, Yom Chamishi. Each one of the days of Shabbos corresponds to 1,000 years in the great historical calendar. By the time Shabbos arrives, the great Shabbos, which means the year 6,000, when that arrives, that's going to be the Yom Shekulo Shabbat Umenucha L'Chayeho Olim, the great grand Shabbos, which is the period of Mashiach. By then it has to come. But during the period of the 6th millennia, there is a building up toward the great moment, and then there are times at which he can come. He can come already at any moment. If we take 1,000 years, 1,000 years corresponds to 24 hours of the great day. The great day it starts at Thursday night until the beginning of Shabbos. We're talking about the sixth millennia, which we are coming toward, already 3/4 of the way through the millennia. So the great era of Shabbos begins, let's assume it starts Thursday night at 6 o'clock. By midnight, a quarter of the day has passed. By 6 in the morning, half the day has passed. If you divide 1,000 years in 2, so that means by the year 5,500, do you know where you are in the great cosmic clock? You're at 6 in the morning of the great era of Shabbos. Seems to me that the Arachayim certainly had in mind that, Erev Shabbos has dawned. The great Erev Shabbos has begun. The Vilna Goyen wrote that the date that we really have to be concerned about is 250 years after that, because 250 years after that brings you to what? It brings you to high noon of the great Erev Shabbos. That was the year 5,750, 2 years ago. That means we are now, according to the Vilna Gaon, according to the Arachayim, we are in the countdown. It means that many of the events that have taken place over the last number of years are all part of the great countdown on the great clock. So, because by 12 o'clock, of the great era of Shabbos, one already has to begin to feel a sense of anticipation. The cholent should be on the stove, the kugel should be cooking, the chicken should just about time to put it in, and if you don't have your challahs from Angels, you're in trouble. It's the great high noon. That was 5,750. The Arachayim obviously begins what he's going to say on this pasuk with this sense of heightened anticipation. And where does he feel it? In the year 5,500, because that is already the beginning. It's morning already. Morning of the great day has dawned. Sometime during the course of that great day, big things are going to happen. Says the Arachayim, the duality of all of the 3 sections of this pasuk are referring to the 2 possibilities. One possibility, as the Gemara has explained, is that Moshiach will come in one single miraculous moment of time. Behold, the heavens are going to open up and there comes Moshiach. The other possibility is he's going to come riding on a donkey. What really is the difference between the two? The difference between the two is one is revolutionary and the other is evolutionary. One is a revolutionary mapach that comes in one single instant of time. But there's a possibility that Mashiach is going to evolve over a period of time. It's going to come derech hateva. Will he come derech nes, miraculously, or will it be derech hateva? 2 possibilities. The Gemara told us the two possibilities. Both of them are expressed here in this pasuk. Erenu v'lo ata, I see him, Bilam says, I see him, but not right now. Right? Not right now means it may be a few hundred years down the road, but it's not going to be a few thousand years down the road. Erenu v'lo ata is referring to Mashiach who will come because Israel is worthy, Zahu. But then Bilam also sees, Ashurenu, I behold him, but v'lo karov, it's not close at all. It may be a long, long process. That refers to Mashiach who comes when Israel is unworthy, but despite that he will come, the process of Geula will begin. And then part two of the pasuk describes the two possibilities. One is Dorach Kochav Miyakov, the star shooting out of Yaakov is the miraculous coming of the Mashiach. The very heavens open up and he comes. Which means part one of the second part of the pasuk corresponds to part one of the first part of the pasuk. Erenu, I see him, but not right now, but not necessarily off in the distant future. That's the miraculous coming of Mashiach. Dorach kochav miYaakov, the star comes shooting out of Yaakov. But there's a second possibility. The second possibility is Ashurenu, I behold him, v'lo karov, but it's not close. You know what's going to happen then? Then it's going to be v'kam shevet miYisrael. A ruler will arise over Israel. He says, in the normal way in which nations develop and grow, going from step to step, the come shevet Yisrael, there will arise a ruler, a government over Israel. And when we say teva in a natural way, what we mean is also God's miracle, the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's camouflaged, it's concealed, it's covered with nature. It looks as though this is something very natural that's happening. Then he goes on to explain that if Geula, if redemption is going to be because Israel is worthy, then it's going to be mufla, miraculous. Mufla v'yidgaleh ha-goel, the Redeemer of Israel will be revealed min ha-shamayim, the mofeid vaot, absolutely unusual. As the Sefer HaZohar said, however, if the Geula is going to be because the time has come, ve'en Yisrael ruyim, Israel is unworthy, then it's going to be completely different. And about that, the Navi Zechariah said that he's going to come oni v'rochev alachamor, a poor man who's riding on a donkey. An interesting point is made by the Arachayim. Dorach Kochav Miyakov is describing the miraculous coming of the Mashiach. The come shevet miYisrael describes the coming of Mashiach cloaked within nature. What's fascinating is the name Yaakov, which usually represents the masses of Israel, describes the miraculous coming of the Mashiach. And the name Yisrael that usually refers to the elite, Gedolei Yisrael, is the name that's used when we are talking about a natural coming of the Mashiach. So he says like this, simple. Because you know when there will be a miraculous coming of the Mashiach? When Israel is worthy. When Yaakov, the masses of Jews, are worthy. In the event that Mashiach is going to come through a natural process because Israel is unworthy, then there Mashiach is going to come b'schus Yisrael, in the schus, in the merit of Gedolei Yisrael, the tzaddikim of Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon says that similar to a medrash, there's a medrash that says, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Im ani nistakel demaseim, if I'm going to take a look at the deeds of Klal Yisrael, Eino nig'olim la'olam, they're never going to be redeemed. Elo l'mi ani nistakel, to whom do I look? I look la'avoteim ha'kidoshim, I look to their holy fathers. If I'm going to look at this chus, they're not going to be redeemed. Who do I look at? I look at their fathers. Says the Vilna Gaon, that's why the Anshei Knesset HaGadolo, when they wrote the Shmona Esrei, so what did they write in Shmona Esrei? they wrote the Zocher Chasdei Avot Umevi Goel Lifnei Bneihem Leman Shemo Biahava. Fundamental principle of our faith. Zocher Chasdei Avos, he remembers the kindness of the Avos Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. And in the schus of the Avos, Mevi Goel, he brings the Redeemer Lifnei Bneihem to their children's children. Why? Leman Shemo, for his own name's sake, because Klal Yisrael dispersed throughout the world, persecuted and oppressed, that's Chilul Hashem. Cheskel says that a number of times. Klal Yisrael back in Eretz Yisrael, this is Kiddush Hashem. So it's Leman Shemo, for his name's sake he does it. And you know how he does it? He does it be Ahava, with great love. So it may not be B'Zchut Yisrael, we may be absolutely unworthy, but the Geula must come. There's the appointed time, and it's going to come. And the process will begin, even if Israel is unworthy. The same idea is expressed in another fascinating Medrash. Medrash says the following, Medrash in Tilim. Katuv echad omer, there's one pasuk that says, Migdol Yeshuot Malko. And then there's another pasuk that says, Magdil Yeshuot Malko. The pasuk, it's basically the same shira, song that is sung by David, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves him from all of his enemies. It appears in Shmuel, the end of Shmuel. It appears also in Tehillim. Now, in one place the word is written Migdol, and in the other place it's written Magdil. We know it, of course, from benching, where during the week we say Magdil, and on Shabbos and Yontif we say Migdol Yeshuot Malko. So the Medrash says, what's the difference between the two? So he says, Amar Rab Yudin says, Lefi she'ein ha'gula shel umazu ba'a bevatachat. The redemption of this people does not come in one single instant of time. Elo kim'a, bit by bit. What's the difference between the word Magdil and the word Migdol? Magdil describes a process, something that is beginning to grow bigger and bigger. Magdil. Migdol means something that stands tall and erect in one single instant of time. So he says, Mahu Magdil, what does Magdil mean? Shehi mitgadelet veholechet lefnei Yisrael, that the Geula continues to grow before Israel. Lefi Shehem, these are the words of the Medrash. Lefi Shehem Achshav Shuruyim B'Tzarot G'dolot, because Israel find themselves now in terrible, terrible trouble. V'im Tavo HaGeula, if the Geula will come at one single instant of time, Einom Yecholim Lizbol Yeshua G'dola, they will not be able to tolerate, they won't be able to live with the dramatic change from terrible suffering to brilliant Geula. Lechachi Ba'ah Kima Kima. That's why Geula may very well come little by little, mitgadelet v'holechet. It grows. And therefore the Medrash says that's why Geula is referred to as Ayelet HaShachar, the morning star. The light begins little by little to break upon the world. As many of the Shonim and Achronim say, Mashallah Mahadav Adama, what is compared to a person who's been in absolute darkness, and then all of a sudden he comes into brilliant light, one becomes disoriented. Difficult to handle it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore has to take Klal Yisrael through a process. And the process, it seems, according to the Medrash, will begin in all of its glory at the moment that Klal Yisrael find themselves in their worst tzara. From the worst tzara they will begin to move out toward Geula. There's another fascinating Medrash. I love this Medrash. I learned it many times, and only this time around reading the Medrash, I found something that is fascinating in the Medrash. And we mentioned the point of this sort, I believe, last week, and I see it in the Medrash, and it's very, very fascinating. It's a Talmud Yerushalmi in a number of places. It says, that Rav Chiya Rabba, the great Rav Chiya, and Rav Shimon ben Chalafta were walking through the valley of Arbel. The valley of Arbel, that's up in the Galil. They refer to it as Bikat Arbel. It's sort of, isn't there sort of a cliff over there? Bikat Arbel. They're walking, huh? Right outside of Tiberi. They were going through Arbel Bikritzata just as the dawn was beginning. And they saw the morning star, that its light was beginning to break through. So Rabbi Chiya said to Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, Kachi gulatan shel Yisrael, this is the way the redemption of Israel will happen. Bitchila at first, kima, it will come little by little. Kol mashihima halechet, as it continues to go, hi holechet v'raba, it becomes greater and greater. My timer, why is this? Why is it so? Pasuk that says, a pasuk in Micha, ki eshev b'choshech, when I sit in darkness, Hashem orli, God is going to be light unto me. The light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will begin to shine. Kach, so the Gemara says. They bring five psukim from the Megillah. Five psukim from Megillah Esther to describe the process of redemption. The first pasuk is, Mordechai Yoshev Bishar HaMelech, and Mordechai sat in the gate of the king. Mordechai was one of the members of the government, the cabinet of Ahasuerus. And after that it says, Vayikach Haman et Halavush, Haman took the royal robes and the royal horse, and he took Mordechai to the streets of Shushan, and he said before him, Koch hayeyoseh Elohish, so shall be done for the man asher hamelech hafeiz bikaro. We are talking about Mordechai now having been raised and lifted to much greater heights than before. First he was only sitting beside Hamelech. Now he already is taken through the streets, a ticker-tape parade through the streets of Shushan. Then it says, by Yoshev Mordechai, Mordechai returned to the gate of the king. We'll get back to that passage. And then it says, Mordechai came out from before the king wearing the royal raiments of purple wool and blue wool and all sorts of beautiful things. And then finally it says, La Yehudim Haisa'ora V'Simcha V'Sasam V'Yakar, for Jews there was life and joy and happiness. So there's a process. Mordechai doesn't become the second in command all in one instant of time. There's a process. First he's just an officer of the king. Then he's singled out for this great parade through the streets of Shushan. The third pasuk that the Gemara brings is fascinating. The end of that great day, the big parade through the streets of Shushan, the pasuk says that Mordechai returned back to the gate, back to the palace of the king. And the Gemara says on that, do you know what he returned to? He returned to sako v'ta'anito. He returned to his sackcloth and his fasting. After the great burst of glory in the streets of Shushan, Mordechai understands that the condition of the Jewish people hasn't changed. They are still all under threat of total extermination. He goes back to his tilim. He goes back to his ash and his sackcloth. Is that part of the process of Geula? Is that a pasuk that represents an upper, or does that represent a downer? That's a downer. But you know what? You know what the Gemara is telling us in such subtle and beautiful fashion? Downers are also part of the process of Geula. As we said, the process of growth is not a straight upward line on a graph. There's up and there's down, a few steps forward, a few steps backward. And here the medrash of the five psukim that it brings, pasuk 1, 2, 4, and 5, represent the meteoric rise, or the gradual, let's say better, the gradual rise of Mordechai. But there's a pasuk in the middle, pasuk number 3, represents the downer of Mordechai, because that's also part of the process, basic and essential to the process. All right. That means, now that we've gone this far, that means there are certain maskanot, there are certain conclusions that we have to arrive at. It would seem quite clear
And so I'm going to prove from Rishonim and Achronim as much as time is going to permit us. If Geula comes as part of a natural process, remember it's Ness, but Ness that is camouflaged and concealed by nature. It looks like a natural process to one who is not able to see beyond the process. One was not able to see that this is all the Yad Hashem, the hand of the Rabbeinu Shlomo. But if it's a natural process, then the conclusions that are to be reached are number one. In a natural process, it means that man must act by the very nature of a natural process. It means, therefore, that it's not one that is being done single-handedly, all alone by God. So who's gonna make the process? How will the process move forward? The process can only move forward because man is going to act. And God will bless that which man does. Number two, there's another conclusion that is to be reached. The other conclusion that is to be reached is that if this is a process that comes because Israel is unworthy, in other words, would they be worthy? It would be miraculous. If it's an evolutionary, gradual process, it means that Israel is unworthy. It may even mean that Chas v'Sholom, there are Rishoyim by Klal Yisrael. Despite that, the Geula will come. The process continues unabated. That's clear. Israel is unworthy, but despite that, Be'ita, it's got to come. And it will come on Iverochev, Alachamor. The third conclusion is, it may very well be that in the course of this process, God is going to bring great events to be through Rishoyim. They may very well be the instrument, because we're talking about a Klal Yisrael that is unworthy. Why is it all happening, as the Vilna Gaon says? Because Zocher Chasdei Avos, God remembers the kindness of the Avos, it comes with Schus Avos. But it may very well be that the Rabbeinu Shem is going to bring the great events to be through people whom we would not necessarily consider Geis Tzadikim. For that matter, there's a famous, it should be a famous pasuk in Melachim. Pasuk that you have to know, it's in Perek Yud Dalet, Perek 14 of Melachim. Of Melachim Bey, it's Tzukim 26 and 27. Ki ro Hashem et ani Yisrael, God saw the suffering of the Jewish people, mora ma'od, it was very terrible. The Efes Otzur, the Efes Ozur, Jews had absolutely no resources. The Ein Ozer li Yisrael, and there wasn't a single person or country that would come to the aid of Klal Yisrael. I'm reading the pasuk in Malachim. V'lo divoer Hashem limchot Shem Yisrael et Shem Yisrael mitachat Hashemayim. God had never said that Israel would be destroyed from the face of this earth. Therefore, v'yoshiyim biyad Yerovam ben Yoash. He saved them through the hands of Yerovam ben Yoash. Yerovam ben Yoash was an Oved Aved Zara. Yerovam ben Yoash was a big, big Russia. The pasuk goes on to say, "Kedvar Hashem," and this was all prophesied by Yonah ben Amittai, Yonah the son of Amittai, the Novi from Gat HaChefer. And do you know what this fellow Yerovam ben Yoash accomplished? Yerovam ben Yoash, who hasted at Gvul Yisrael, he returned to the boundaries of Israel. Milavo Hamas, he conquered lands that hadn't been conquered in many years. Eretz Yisrael became bigger in the days of Yerovam ben Yoash than it had most probably ever been in history. And through whom did all of this come? It came through Yerovam ben Yoash. So what we're going to say, Rabbeinu Shem, what are you talking about? You couldn't have found somebody better to bring this through. Only Yerovam ben Yoash. This Eved Aved Zara, this Kefir B'Yikar. What are you talking about? The Rabbeinu Shem has different cheshbonos. When the Rabbeinu Shem sees that the situation of Klal Yisrael is horrible, the angels, early Yisrael, there's nobody to save Klal Yisrael. The Lo Dibur Hashem, and God never said that he will permit the destruction of Klein Sol Vayoshiyim, so he helped them through the hands of Yerovam ben Yoash. I mean, the Pesukim are so clear. Pesukim are so absolutely clear. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to bring Geula, when Klal Yisrael finds themselves in terrible, terrible straits, and there's nobody to come to the rescue of Klal Yisrael, let it be our Rasha. Some say that even in this Rasha there has to be something of a Bein Adam L'Chaver, there has to be some little goodness even in that black, idolatrous heart. The mother says about Yeravim Ben Yoash, somebody once told him, Lashon Hara, about Amos, and he refused to accept Lashon Hara. In other words, the one redeeming feature that most probably none of us knows, if you would have asked us on the street, living in the days of Yeravim Ben Yoash, most probably we would have said, this is Yeravim Ben Yoash. This is the Chazar Rusha. What are you talking about? He makes Medetz look like Tzadikim. But no, Rebbeinu's Cheshbeinus are different. Vayoshien, he saved them through the hands of Yeravam ben Yoash. The Sephorno, and let me make one point clear. I'm just going to be quoting a few classic sources, but you should know that any quote, I can compound it 10 times over from all sorts of other Rishonim and Achronim. The Sephorno at the beginning of Parashat Vayishlach says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yaakov, Lo tidag, you shouldn't worry, that your seed will ever be destroyed amongst the Goyim. Even if your children are not going to be good, I promise you that because I am Kel Shaddai, I am the one who's capable of everything. I do not need an object who is prepared for Geula. I bring it even if they are unworthy. Makes no difference. They're your children, Zocher Chazdei Avos. The Maral Miprag says that all of the promises and guarantees that were made to Klal Yisrael through the Nevi'im are in no way dependent upon any condition. They are totally unconditional, not dependent upon the worthiness of Klal Yisrael. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised and guaranteed comes though we are not worthy. The Rambam, in his great letter to the Jews of Teman, who are going through a terrible, terrible time, in his words of encouragement to them, he says, "Ukmokin bisranu, God, let us know. God gave us strength. Shenimna etzlo, it is impossible by him. Limos otanu biklalenu. He cannot reject Klal Yisrael as a whole. Can't be. It will never be. Afal pishen machiseu, even though we anger him, v'na'avor al mitzvotav, and we transgress his mitzvot, he does not reject Klal Yisrael." If you want a classic Hasidic approach, the Noyim El Melech, this is beautiful. He says, you know, up until now we've been talking, you know, the Sephorno, the Rambam, the Maharal. Now listen, even if Jews are Rishoyim, God has made a promise, and the promise is totally independent of what Jews are like. Says the Heilige Noyim Al Elimelech, nah, it's not because we're Rishoyim. As a klal, as a people, Klal Yisrael are always tzaddikim, because it says, Va'amech, kulam tzaddikim, la'olam yirshu aretz. Your people are all tzaddikim, and therefore they're going to inherit the land. Even though Pratim, individuals amongst Klal Yisrael, may sin and be sinners, but that does not affect Klal Yisrael as a whole. Klal Yisrael as a whole are all tzaddikim. Always tzaddikim. It's not how odd of God to choose the Jews. He knew precisely what he was choosing. The Kedusha of Klal Yisrael applies to all Jews. Yisrael, Achal Pishachoto. Yisrael, who a Jew, even though he sinned, he is Israel. There's another point that really flows from everything that we are saying, but I want to make it very, very clear. In the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, there is a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Eliezer says, if Israel does tshuva, they will be redeemed. If they don't do tshuva, they will not be redeemed. Rabbi Yehoshua says, even if they don't do tshuva, they're going to be redeemed. And the Gemara brings, Rabbi Eliezer brings psukim to prove Jews have to do tshuva. Rabbi Yehoshua brings psukim to demonstrate that even if Jews don't do tshuva, they're going to be redeemed. If the Rebbe Yehoshua brings his last pasuk, the Gemara says, Shotak Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar remains silent. There's another verse, I believe, in the Rishami, it says, Istalik Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar left, he removed himself. All of course, we say that clearly the end of the Gemara is very clear, that the halacha is like Rebbe Yehoshua. Even Rebbe Elazar agrees with Rebbe Yehoshua that Jews will be redeemed even in the event that they are unworthy and have not done tshuva. But here there's an extremely important point. It means that there are really three possibilities of geula. Possibility number one is in the event that Israel is worthy. That means they did tshuva. Then the redemption will come. On the other hand, the Rambam says, in Hilchot Tshuva, the Rambam says, Ein Yisrael Nigol, and Israel will not be redeemed until they do tshuva. And the Rambam goes on to say, "Ukvar hivticha Torah," the Torah has already promised us. So, the end will be that Israel will do tshuva besov galutan at the end of their redemption. Umiyad, and immediately, hein nigalin, they are redeemed. So Rambam says it has to be tshuva. The first pshat in the Rambam is the following: the process of redemption, the evolutionary process, is going to begin even when Israel is unworthy. But obviously, what's the purpose of the whole process? So that ultimately, at the end, V'hu Hashem v'melech al kol ha'aretz, God will be seen clearly as the king of the whole land. God says, I will give them leiv chadosh, v'ruach chadosh, ha'etim v'kibam, I'm going to give them a new heart. I'm going to make them serve me. So at the end, of course, they're going to do tshuva. What's the whole point? The whole point of the geula process is that at the end of the process, Jews should remain the same non-shomrei Torah mitzvahs that they are. Absolutely not. But the task of making them into shomrei Torah mitzvahs is a task for the Rabbeinu Shlomo, for Mashiach. For Mashiach. And ultimately, that will be achieved. That will be accomplished. But the beginning of the process, even if Israel is not worthy, even if Israel is not worthy. What I'm telling you now has really been the subject of great debate for well over 100 years, 150 years. And I'm going to give only one example, but it's an example that can also be compounded many times over. I'm going to quote from a number of writings of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. I want to make one thing absolutely certain. I have to know this for sure. Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch is a giant. A giant whose svarim will be studied most probably for forever. Forever. Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch was a great leader, not only of German Jewry, he was a great leader in Klal Yisrael. But he had an approach. I'm just going to take a few quotations. As I go through occasionally, so often I decide that I'm going to clean up my study. We never succeed. It's a process. That's, of course, a gradual and evolutionary one, and it needs man to push it along. If man doesn't work, it's not going to happen. So I don't do that terribly often. Here I'm quoting from an article that appeared in the Jewish Observer, February of 1990. I happen to pick this out of all the fascinating things that I have. And it's an article by somebody who lives in Yerushalayim, who is a direct descendant of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. The title of the article is Eretz Yisrael, Zionism, and Medinat Yisrael in the Philosophy of Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. So he brings all sorts of quotes from Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, where he establishes basically what his shita is. So there are a number of points, and we're going to deal with a number of these points. It's possible that we won't even have to deal with them after what has already been said. Basically, he says that Geula and Mashiach will come only through spiritual regeneration and divine intervention. Will not come in any other way. I have here the first Chumash that we have here in Shul. Ah, here it is. On page 692. Shamson Hirsch writes about the fourth bracha in benching. However, one addition was made by the sages. The fourth bracha of the benching, Hatov HaMeitiv, was added by the sages after the revolt led by Bar Kokhba during the reign of Hadrian had proven to be a disastrous error, and it had become necessary to admonish the Jews that they must never again attempt to restore their nationhood by their own might, but should leave their future as a nation entirely to divine providence. The same idea is repeated a number of places in his Siddur, in Chorev, twice in his first work, the 19 Letters of Ben Uzziel, in letter number 16. This is basic to his whole approach. The Geula will only come by the direct intervention of God. It will only come as the result of a total and complete spiritual regeneration of Klal Yisrael, tshuva. Here is another quote. It became essential that the Jewish people be reminded for all times of another important fact, namely that Israel must never again attempt to restore its national independence by its own power. It was to entrust its future as a nation solely to divine providence. In the Siddur, in the Shemoneh Esrei, by the bracha of Goel Yisrael, it says, folly, folly to think that we will ever be able to establish nationhood on our own. It comes only as a result of divine intervention. Such a reunion from the Golos cannot be brought about by human action or even only through the intermediary of human effort. We must wait for God himself to sound the shofar. Further, what emerges from this? So then comes the next step in the philosophy of Rav Hirsch. One of the great leaders of the Chovevei Tzion movement, the movement of those who are to start it toward the middle of the last century, Jews to return to Eretz Yisrael, was Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalisher, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, who kept calling upon Rav Shamson Paul Hirsch to join him in the leadership of this movement to buy land in Eretz Yisrael, to send Jews who will colonize the land. There's a famous letter of Rav Hirsch to Rav Kalisher, where he says, how can one see the beginnings of Geula in the fact that a few Jews who are far from the ways of Torah and mitzvahs, and are from the new type of those who have cast off the yoke of Judaism, have become prominent in the eyes of the government? Some of the Shoyim are going to bring the Geula. In addition, Rav Hirsch states, he absolutely cannot see nor even imagine that Hashem should choose non-religious people as his messengers to bring the Geula. He therefore rejected Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalisher's request that he join him in being a leader of the movement of Shivat Zion. He also, there's another letter in which he wrote to Rav Kalisher when he finally wanted Rav Kalisher to leave him alone. He said that what you see to be a great mitzvah, I see to be not a small aveira. The whole movement for Eretz Yisrael. Now, I believe that we've said quite a bit in this year that would seem to indicate it may very well be a process. It's not necessarily going to come as a result of clear, miraculous, divine intervention. One single instant time, we started with the Gemara. That man, in a natural process, that man is the one who makes the process? Be'ezrat Hashem? That's clear. that there will be Geula, or the beginnings of Geula, even in the event that Jews are unworthy? I think we made that quite clear. That it may very well be that God is going to use Rishoyim as the instrument of Geula. That was a pasuk in Malachim. Yeravam ben Yosh. Yeravam ben Yosh was not a Geis HaTzadik. It's clear that it was a Rosh. It says on him right near there, it says, Vayasa, he did the evil in the eyes of God. The position that was taken by Rav Hirsch, I would say, was also the position that was taken by the Hungarian Jewish leadership. Now, as far as I'm concerned, Rav Shamshon Aphorel Hirsch's godless has not been diminished by one iota. He had a shita. He had an approach. It may very well be, that what he was hoping for, he was hoping for everything. What he wanted to see, and ultimately that's the goal, what he wanted to see was taka, spiritual regeneration, a great Klal Yisrael brought to Eretz Yisrael on the wings of eagles. Would he say the same thing 150 years later? I don't know, following the Shoah, he might have changed his views completely. I know that. What is disturbing to me is that here in 1990, an Einikel, or a great-grand Einikel of his living in Yerushalayim, writes in this article how, with what clarity and with what lucidity, Rav Shamshon Aphorel Hirsch saw what was going to happen. He writes, what does all of this mean for our situation today? Has it all been made irrelevant by the fact that a state has come into existence? Most certainly not. The view that one holds about the desirability or permissibility of seeking a Jewish state surely must affect the way one relates to it once it exists. In other words, if you see that the Jews had no right to establish a state, so now that it's established, so what? So it was born in sin. So therefore, the way I look at it doesn't change at all. Doesn't exist. That's it. Does not exist halachically or religiously. I mean, this is obviously not an intelligent approach. I mean, is it possible, therefore, that min hashamayim God has passed otherwise? There could have been two possibilities: a miraculous regeneration of Klal Yisrael and divine intervention, or the possibility that it's going to come through a natural process. Rav Hirsch may have certainly hoped for the regeneration of Klal Yisrael, but it didn't happen that way. So because it didn't happen that way, doesn't mean that he was wrong. He wasn't wrong. But to try and tell me in 1990 that he was absolutely right, and he saw the situation clearly, sorry, that doesn't make any sense to me. And this passes as Torah Hashkafa in our world. And it's not only in German Jewry, where it certainly was continued, I don't know. This morning I read in the paper that there were riots in Washington Heights. I don't know. One of the Rabbanim of Washington Heights is supposed to have said that we have no right to leave Washington Heights. Which Novi told us that we should leave Washington Heights and go off to New Jersey? You tell me the Novi who told them to move to Washington Heights in the first place. But there are Nevi'im and Postim who said to live in Eretz Yisrael. Absolutely. Certainly. And then, another part of this article. It has been argued that since the United Nations resolution of 1947, one can no longer object to the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Israel as being a rebellion against the nations. However, even if it was so, this does not affect Rav Hirsch's other concerns. All right, so 2 points. What were his other concerns? His other concerns were, Jews won't be able to fulfill the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. I tell you, one of the great things of the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael is that the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz have become alive, and they're well, and you know where, in Eretz Yisrael. We have been able to deal with the problem, and there's no question about it that it will get better and better. Get better and better. Jews hadn't learned about Terumas and Mises for 1800 years. And it's alive and well. It's fine. But then to say it has been argued that since the United Nations resolution establishing, permitting the establishment of a state, because Rav Hirsch also writes a number of times that establishing the state is a rebellion against the nations of the world and we're not permitted to do it. Also the position taken by Satmar. The only thing is, here I can quote most probably dozens of Rishonim and Achronim. I'll begin with the Ramban, Sadiqor, and the Ramban. Ramban writes in Shir HaShirim, wrote it 700-800 years ago, that ultimately Jews are going to return to Eretz Yisrael b'rishon ha'umot, with the permission of the nations of the world. Other Rishonim write that the third return to Eretz Yisrael is going to be just like the second. Jews return from Golus Babel how? With the permission that was granted to them by Kodesh, king of Pharos. I'm telling you, so many Rishonim said in advance, they foresaw precisely how it was going to happen. But Meir Simcha, Meir Chochma said, wrote in 1920, 1921, after the Balfour Declaration and the League of Nations San Remo Conference, now there is no longer any fear of rebellion against the nations. Once the nations of the world have established in principle that Jews have a right to a homeland and Eretz Yisrael, nothing to worry about. And this is sort of passed over in this article, the Jewish Observer. It has been argued as though, you know, who knows, some Mizrachist there argued that since the United Nations permitted the establishment of the state, it's not a rebellion against the nations of the world. So that there are different approaches within the Jewish world. There's no question about it that a great deal of what is hashkof in the yeshiva world, so to speak, today is also a direct result of this approach. That whatever has taken place over here, it was born in sin. So we have to live with it. So listen, we had representatives who sat in the Sayam in Poland, the parliament of Poland, and tried to save whatever we could for Klal Yisrael. So we'll sit over here, we'll sit with Shlomo Taloni and with Yossi Sarir, the place of Zulun Hamanach into the Tzuris, and we will try and do whatever we can. But what happens if we look at the Arachayim HaKadosh, if we take a look at the Gemara, then you know what you see? You see that precisely what has taken place has been foreseen and foretold. It's going to be a natural process. It's going to be evolutionary. It's going to be gradual. And in a gradual evolutionary process, so you know what? Man has to act. It's going to come through our act, through our doing, through our work. And therefore, it's clear that it comes even if Israel is unworthy. Even if they're unworthy. And more than that, he may very well use people who are not Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs. All right, I'll say the word that I dislike saying. Even people who are Rishoyim, he will use them as the instruments in this gradual process. That's what the Arachayim is saying over here. Er'enu v'lo akha, ashurenu v'lo karov, dorach kochav miyakov, v'kom shevet miyisrael. And yes, that shevet that arises from Israel, the Magbil Yeshuot Malko, the one that grows, Godelet V'Holechet, the Geulat Yisrael that comes like the sunrise, Kima Kima, bit by bit, Mordechai Yoshev Bishar Hamelech, and then we find Mordechai going out from before the king with royal robes and raiments until finally, La Yehuda Moisar of the Simcha. It makes a big difference to one's neshama and to the way in which one feels about things, if we know quite clearly that we are zeicher to live in the midst of an absolutely fascinating process. And that we are the ones who are acting on the stage, but it's all been determined by a Rabbeinu Shlomo. So I say, I use this article about Rav Samson of Paul Hirsch in order to demonstrate the other side of the coin. His godless is not at all diminished by me. On the contrary, as I found in the very famous sefer that we've talked about before. We'll talk about it at another time. The Eim HaBonim Smecha. Eim HaBonim Smecha was written by Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Tachtosh Hashem Yinkom Damo. It was a sefer that he wrote in Budapest in 1942 and 43. It was published in 43. It was the last sefer, if I'm not mistaken, the last sefer to be published. Before the Germans came in, the Nazis had not yet come into Hungary, but they knew already what was happening in Poland. He was one of the Gedolei Yisrael. He sat down in a room in Budapest and he started thinking, why is all of this happening to us? So he describes how he had always been a Talmud of the Minchas Aluza. The Minchas Aluza was the Munkatcher Rebbe. The Munkatcher Rebbe, his position was, under no circumstances do we have a right to go to Eretz Yisrael or do anything. It's all going to be miraculous. It's got to be miraculous. A position very similar to the position taken by Rav Sham Shmuel Fall Hirsch. And he says, I never questioned it, I never doubted, I never dealt with this area in Hashgacha. But now, because of the terrible tzuvos, he decides to restudy the whole issue. And he goes through all of the vast knowledge that he has of Shavdavim, Shalmi, everything from Rishonim, Akronim to the Hasidic greats. And he arrives at a conclusion that it was all wrong. We should have been part of building up Eretz Yisrael. It was a terrible mistake. We should have told Jews to go to Eretz Yisrael. And he says, the Ben Yisrael, I make a nether in the event that you save me and my family, I make a nether to go to Eretz Yisrael as soon as I get out of here. But he didn't. He didn't. He was killed by the Nazis. So he writes about his Rebbe, the Minchas Alazar, that what the Minchas Alazar said may very well have been the ideal that he was looking for, but would he have seen the tzuvos that we're in right now? The Minchas Alazar would have said otherwise. I hold that Rav Sham Shmuel Fall Hirsch, would he have seen the matzav of Klal Yisrael, what happened to his Frankfurt, he would have said otherwise. But no, you can still have an article of this sort 43 years later, 45 years later, as though nothing had happened, and as though all of the Rishonim and the Achronim and all of the Gemaras that we discussed, as though they didn't exist. The study of the sources clearly demonstrates gradual evolutionary process. Man is the instrument, even if we are unworthy. Yet Hashem, we will become worthy and be zochah to Geula Shleima. Okay.